Parshas Vayishlach. Okay, so the primary part of the first half of this parsha for sure focuses on this major meeting between Yaakov and Esav. The parsha begins with Yaakov sending these agents, these messengers, Rashi says angels, literally, to Esav. Yaakov, of course, is on his way home. He's been with his uncle Laban for 20 years working. He's now married his four wives. He's had, I think by this time, all of his children from last week's parsha, if I remember correctly. So, 11 out of 12?
Benjamin.
Right, Naya Benjamin. So he's 11 out of his 12 children have been born, 12 sons at least, yeah, Dina. Did have 12 children were born, just not a boy. And now he heads home. So on his way home, he meets up with Esav. Now, it's interesting to note, the Ramban, throughout his commentary, throughout these verses, understands that this is a lesson to us about how to deal with the nations of the world in all of our endeavors, that this episode of how Yaakov treats Esav is going to be indicative of that. And there are various lessons which he derives throughout the story in his introduction and in his commentary on the entire parsha. He writes that there are three major lessons which the Torah wants us to know in its description of this story. That's the main thing. Right when we start off, three major lessons. Number one, says the Ramban, what we need to learn from here is the idea that Hashem will always protect and will save his loved ones from harm. And he does so, says the Ramban, Vayishlach as hamalach, he sends an angel to protect us. That, says the Ramban, is number one. Even though Esav was clearly the stronger of the two parties, together armed with his 400 men, even though Esav was stronger than Yaakov, that Hashem would always send somebody to protect him. And in this particular instance, it was an angel that was sent. This is the angel that Yaakov will later refer to at the end of Sefer Bereishis, Hamalach HaGoel Osimi Kora, the angel which protects me from all evil. He blesses his children, should protect the grandchildren and sons also as well. Which is in the Ramban's way of saying that Hashem will protect us. You don't know how, and you don't know through which medium, but that, number one, what we learn from this lesson, says the Ramban, is that Hashem will protect us. Lesson number two, says the Ramban. Od, Shehu lo botach bitzidkoso, v'hishtadel v'hatzolo v'kol yecholto. That Yaakov himself did not trust, or rely, I should say, on his righteousness, that everything would be okay, but rather he was mishtadol, he attempted and got engaged in his own being able to be saved, the chol yecholto. Whatever he was able to do, he did. So that we learn from here, says the Ramban, what the Torah wants us to know, is that he didn't just sit back and say, all right, I learned lesson number one, Hashem will save me, therefore my job is just to sit back and let God do all the work, but that Yaakov did everything possible to get himself ready. As we will learn, with whether or not with prayer, getting the camps ready, fighting, he did everything possible that would be necessary in order for him to get himself ready to be saved. And says the Ramban, number three, there's a remez ledoros that exactly in the way that Yaakov prepared for battle with his brother Esav, ye'aralonu tamed in b'nei Esav. This will always happen to us with the children and descendants of Esav. Now, his language is strong. Ye'eralonu tamid. This will always be happening to us. The Gemara says the halacha that Esav is so ne'ef Yaakov. It's like a law. It's like a halacha that Esav hates Yaakov. And that we'll always be fighting this battle. The galus that we're in now is the galus of Edom, of Esav. Excuse me. So that what happened between Yaakov and Esav will continuously play itself over. This is the part that we'll study in a few moments. That it will repeat itself, and the way that Yaakov handles it is the way that we need to be prepared to handle it well, and to handle it as well. Says Ramban, and how is that? Ro'i lanu le'echos, it's appropriate for us to take hold of the same pattern that Yaakov did. Number one, he prepared himself with tefillah, with prayer. Uledoro, he sent gifts to appease his brother Esav. And number three, lahatzalah b'derech milchama levroyach ulihinatzon, to get ourselves ready for war, to run and be saved in whatever it is that we would need to do. So in the same way that Yaakov prepared with prayer, with gifts, and then with getting himself ready for physical war, so too, says Ramban, we need to learn from that as well in our dealings with Esav, which will continue throughout history as they have. That says in Ramban, that's just his introduction to this story, this entire episode of Yaakov sending out the messengers and the messengers returning and then actually greeting Esav. The lessons to be learned are A, Hashem protects, B, we need to do our part, and in the same way, what is our part? The same way that Yaakov did it with prayer, with gifts, and then with actual preparing for war, so too do we need to do that as well. Now, I want to point out the very next comment that Ramban makes is an interesting comment. The very next comment he says is, why is Yaakov sending these messengers out to Esav anyway? Why does he, who initiates this entire contact? It's Yaakov who initiates the contact. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefanav. Yaakov sent the angels or the messengers before him. Explains the Ramban, why? Because Yaakov is coming back from Haran, back to Eretz Yisrael, to his parents. Where did his parents live? The Ramban says they lived in the south of Eretz Yisrael. The journey would take him near or possibly through Edom, through the land that Esav was in. And Yaakov feared that Esav would hear that he was returning and go out to meet him. So to preempt that possibility, Yaakov sent the angels, the messengers, first to address the issue before it would happen on the spot. He wanted to do it first. Good idea or bad idea? Says the Ramban, the sages held this was a bad idea. Kfar tosuhu chachonim al zeh. The sages took him to task on this, says the Ramban. Omru b'vreishis rabban, they quote a medrash. They quote a pasuk, I should say. The sages quote a pasuk from Mishlei, from Proverbs. Machzik ba'ozne kelev, like one who holds or grabs hold of the dog's ear, is the one who engages in a quarrel that is not his. That's what the pasuk in Mishlei says. Says the sages, that verse, grabbing hold of a dog's ear, is like engaging in a quarrel that's not yours, is apt for what Yaakov did. Amalor kavish marcho, Hashem said to Yaakov, L'darko hayam ahalech, Esav was going about his merry way. He was busy with his things. He was running his country. He was busy with the things that he's doing. V'hayisa mishalech, and all of a sudden you sent him all of these people, one camp after another camp with gifts and all these animals. Koyo maravducha Yaakov, so said your servants Yaakov. What are you doing? Leave the man alone. He was just fine. Why did you engage and initiate this contact? Says the Ramban, it's my impression that this is a remez, this is for foretelling what would happen to the Jewish people. Ki anachnu hischalnu nifiyuaseinu biyad Edom, that we would begin our own downfall in the hands of Edom, in the hands of Rome. Edom is Rome, the destroyers of the second Beit HaMikdash, and then there, whose descendants, the Gaulus that we are in right now, is still considered a continuation of the Gaulus of Edom. We started it, says Ramban. As he quotes from the Sefer HaChashmonoyim, Ki Malchei Bayesheni, the kings at the time of the Second Temple, Bo'u Bivrisim Haromoyim, they initiated a covenant, a peace treaty with the Romans, Umehem Shebo'u the Romans, some even went to Rome itself to deal with them. And then says the Ramban, Zehi Aysa Sibas Nefilosim V'yadam, and when they aroused the attention of the Romans, like, who are these people coming from the Mideast that they want, like, what is going on over there? That began the whole series of events which eventually led to their desire to take over the entire land, the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and the exile which ensued from that. Says Ramban, that incident was foreshadowed by this parsha where Yaakov sends the agents on his own. He initiates the contact with Esav. And says Ramban, even though it's true, we learn from this the important lessons that yes, Hashem will protect us from those mightier than us. And that, yes, we need to do everything possible. And what it is that we need to do in terms of getting ready with prayer, with gifts, and with war. But don't start up. Don't be the one to initiate the contact when everything was going just fine without your getting involved. Don't be the one to start the process. And this would foreshadow what would happen in the times of the second Beit HaMikdash, says Ramban, when we began our own downfall. That says Ramban is an introduction. Now, there are many, many comments along the way that we can go through. As far as what we derive from here, I would like to focus specifically on the very end of this episode. And that begins on page 178, where Yaakov actually meets up with Esav. Let's learn those verses where they actually have contact. Now, there's much to talk about, and I'm pointing out that we're skipping through that in terms of the series of agents which were sent, And then they came back and they said, Esav is coming out to meet you. He's got his 400 men. And then Yaakov gets afraid and he divides the camp. And then he eventually has his fight with the angel, which he gets hurt. And then they eventually meet up. We're just going to learn that last piece where they actually meet up starting then and what happens from there.
Good question. How do you put into the context of the commentary that says the meeting with the angel is going to take place? In other words, send messengers to meet angel. Let's say he did it quietly. He just was going to go through. This meeting with the angel has to happen. He has to become his Yisrael. He has to have that. Or maybe he doesn't have to have that. Maybe he wouldn't have inspired then the angel of Esav to come and wrestle spiritually with them, so to speak. I wonder if the commentaries speak about how that would have had direct impact on something else.
I don't know. It could have happened in another context, could have happened in a different time. I don't know. Okay, I apologize. Excuse me.
Weather has changed.
Okay, so I don't understand about this. If Yaakov sends an angel, if he has angels, he's commanding angels to go forth, so he's got so much control over angels. If he's fearful of his life, if he thinks that Esav is going to be the antagonist and, you know, try to kill him or do him harm, like, I mean, is it showing how righteous he is by not sending angels to go rough him up a little bit, you know?
Here, we'll actually see they do rough them up a little bit. We'll see that in we're going to learn.
Right.
But I'm just pointing out this dichotomy of seemingly to be of this gigantic spiritual stature of dealing with angels and yet being afraid of Esav harming him. And dealing with, like, how do we combine this sense of this spiritual giant fearful of Esav's physical seemingly harm? Which is a fair question. We see that often. Avram himself and Yitzhak, all through the Avos, in terms of when they would go into foreign places, go into war, seem to have some type of a fear. Many of the commentators say that they were, Ramban and Rashi mentioned it here, that they're always afraid that they're undeserving, that they're not deserving of Hashem's protection. Maybe they did something inadvertently wrong, which would cause them to fall. And there seems to be that issue which they're on some level addressing.
Yeah, well, the humans have the ability to, they control angels.
So that's the very first pasuk of the parsha. Vayishlach Yaakov malachim. So the simple meaning is he sent angels. He just sent people in his camp. But Rashi comments that they were literally angels. So if you're going to go with Rashi's comment, which is based on the Medrash, that on some level he actually sent angels, and the answer to that is yes. He had certainly some control of bearing over them, that he sent them to do this task. The simple meaning of the pasuk is that he just sent, you know, a couple of guys with some gifts to Esau, but
it shows how insecure he was in his spirituality. Because if he sent angels, they'd probably go immediately and be there, like, just like that. So having powers, him having direct powers, but having that much control, I guess that shows how insecure.
Good. I don't know. Let's move on. Let's go to what I wanted to get to. Let's start with on page 178, verse. This is the first actual face-to-face encounter, and this is pretty deep into the parsha already. It's, you know, 4, 5, 6 pages in already, where there's been a lot of back and forth. This is the first actual face-to-face encounter between Yaakov and Esav. They've already had all the gifts, which had been stacked with space in between, have now already reached Esav. All of the children have come forth and bowed down to Esav. All of the wives have been introduced, and now we finally have the first meeting between Yaakov and Esav. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vayoymer. And he asks, this is Esav asking, I was not totally accurate. This is not their first face-to-face. That happened in verse 5, when he meets the 4 and 5, he meets them, they kiss, and then he asks, who are all these people? And he says, these are the children that Hashem is blessing. So this is not the first encounter. We're in the middle of that first encounter. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, Vayomer, Miucha koila machaneh hazeh asher pagashti. Now Rashi interprets this as our scroll translated, what did you intend by that whole camp that I met? What's with this? Why did you send all of these people in front of me? Says Rashi, that's the simple meaning as it's been translated. What did you mean? What did you intend with this camp that was sent before me. Now Rashi quotes a Medrash here, which I'm not going to give any explanation for, but just to share with you the Medrash that Rashi quotes, because the words of the Pasuk are a little bit odd. Mi lecha kol hamachanezo. Who to you is this entire camp? So it's an odd usage of words, which Rashi translates on the simple level, meaning like, why did you send these to me? But Rashi, based on the Medrash, which is bothered by the language, says, Medrash show, Kiso shel malachim paga. Esav and his men, as they were approaching Yaakov, ran into a series of angels. That I would be pushing them back, causing them, you know, ruffling them up, if you will. Ve'omrim lahem, shel mi atem. And the angels would say to this, who are you guys, and what side are you on? Ve'heim omrim lahem, shel Esav. We're on Esav's side, the men would report. Ve'heim omrim, haku, haku. And all the angels would start saying, beat him up, strike him down, hit him. So the people in angels' camp would say, no, let us alone, let us alone. Esav, he's the son of Yitzchak. We're good guys. We're on the side of good. We're Yitzchak's son. The angels didn't care. Esav, I don't care that he's Yitzchak's son. This is Esav. Still beat him up. Then Benosho Avraham, so the people said, leave us alone. We are grandchildren of Avraham. They didn't care. Achiv shel Yaakov, they said, oh, he's Yaakov's brother. Omrim lahem, imkei mishalonu atem. Then the angel said, oh, then they're on our side. Yaakov's brother, they left him alone. Rashi seems to be, quoting the Medrash, seems to be saying, in terms of that ruffling up of Esav's men, that as they were approaching, the angels made it clear that the only merit that Esav would have would actually be coming from Yaakov himself directly, that in terms of letting him know Yaakov's stature, that they only sort of let up or let him alone when they said, well, we're brothers to Yaakov. Sons of Yitzhak, grandson of Avram, didn't do it. Brothers to Yaakov. Okay, but let's move on. So Yaakov responds to Esav's question, Vayoymer lim sochein ve'enei Adoni. Why is it that I have sent all of these gifts, says Yaakov, specifically to find favor in your eyes. I want to just make a brief comment. The Ramban actually here says a very interesting thing. It's a follow-up of a comment that he made earlier. It's unclear, the Ramban says, whether or not Esav actually received any of the gifts. The first angels that were ever sent by Yaakov, or messengers, or people, whoever they were, whether or not they were received or not. If you look back, there's just an interesting comment the Ramban makes. It's the very first page 170, in the very beginning, Yaakov sends, this is one of those things which you would almost never notice, no matter how many times you read the parsha, almost like skip right by this. Yaakov sends these agents or angels to Esav, his brother, charges them saying, this is what you should say to him, so said your servant Yaakov, I've lived with Laban all of these years, I've acquired all of these things, and I sent them to find favor before you. So it's clear that Yaakov said explicitly why he was sending these things, which would make it a little bit odd why Esav asks when he meets up with Yaakov, why did you send these things? Because Yaakov said that was his opening line. This is why I'm sending them, in order to find favor, which is exactly what Yaakov says 6 pages later when he actually meets up. He says, to find favor in your eyes. Look at verse 7. The angels returned to Yaakov saying, we came to your brother, to Esav. Moreover, he is heading towards you and 400 men are with him. Did they or did they not report and say the things that Yaakov asked them to say to him? Unclear. It says, Banu el achicha, we came to your brother and he was coming towards you. And he's got an army with him. So the Ramban says two things. He said, either it's possible, of course, yes, they got there, and they made the statement that they needed to, as Yaakov asked them to, and the Torah doesn't record it, because it's unnecessary for us to know that, since that's most likely what they did. However, says the Ramban, I think it's also a possibility that they never got the words out, because Esav never received them. He was not interested, his anger and his hatred towards Yaakov was such, that he did not receive them, and he never even let them open up their mouths to say what it is that they were there for. Which would explain why the very next pasuk in the beginning of says, Yaakov became very frightened and it distressed him. Because he wasn't sure what he was going to get, because he ran into an Esav who was not even willing to receive the messengers that he had sent with the message, and then he decides instead to go with all of these gifts.
because we never actually receive them. And the Ramban says, and that's a possibility why here, when they actually meet up, the question that Esav asks is, why did you send these things? And Yaakov then repeats, well, it was only to find favor in your eyes.
Yeah. I'm sending to you. It just says, I'm sending to tell you.
Correct. In other words, he only actually sends the gift and then in a second round.
Yeah.
And then you present. That's when he divides it and then he sends the whole camp with gifts. In other words, there's a whole like hierarchy exactly as to how it developed in terms of... The Ravan mentions that, he mentions it again over here, that it was possible that Esav had never actually received the gift and never accepted the agents in the first place. Okay, moving on. The Yomer Esav. So now he's received these lavish gifts, a whole series of different parties sending him all of these gifts and all of the animals and all of the things. He asks Yaakov, why have you done this? And Esav, Yaakov responds, L'msochein be'inei Adonai, in order to find favor in your eyes. Vayomer Esav yeshli rov. I have much. I have plenty. I have a lot. Yeshli rav. I have a lot. Yehi l'cho asher loch. Let what you have remain yours. That's Esav's response. We'll contrast that, of course, with Yaakov's response in a few minutes, which the sages have much to talk about. I have much. Keep that which is yours. Says Rashi, Pasuk Tes in the first column, Yilocha asher loch kan hoidelo al habrachos. At this point in that statement in which Esav says, keep yours that which is yours, keep for you that which is yours, Esav was acknowledging the blessings that Yaakov had purchased from him 20-some-odd years before. At that statement, Yaakov was acknowledging that and saying, you can keep them, they're yours, you have bought them, and they belong to you. Vayomer Yaakov, says Yaakov, Al na, I beg of you, don't decline my gift. Right now Esav is, at least in words, saying, I don't want your gift. Yaakov has attempted to give him a whole lot of things. And Esav has declined, saying, I have a lot. I don't want it. Keep it. Says Yaakov, no, he begs him to take it. If I have found favor in your eyes, please take my gift from my hands. Difficult phrase. Let's see how to translate this phrase. Says Yaakov. Now let's leave the last phrase untranslated because Rashi and the Rabban are going to argue about this, but it would read as follows as Asko has it. I beg of you, if I have now found favor in your eyes, then accept my tribute from me. Inasmuch as I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of a divine being, and you were appeased by me. What is Yaakov saying to Esav here? Let's read one more pasuk, 11. Please accept my gift which was brought to you, and as much as Hashem has been gracious to me, and in as much as I have everything. He urged him, and he accepted. So we have a back and forth. Should he take it? Should he not take it? Yaakov sends the gift. Esav doesn't want it. He declines. What are the words Esav uses in his declining the gift? Yesh li rav. I have much. I have a lot. I have plenty. Yaakov begs him to take it, and he begs him to take it with this phrase, inasmuch as I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of a divine being. In the original Hebrew, the word that he uses, kiros p'nei Elohim, seeing your face is like seeing the p'nei Elohim, the face of a divine being, vatirtseni. Vatirtseni is a word which means appeasement. Now, where Rashi and Ramban are going to argue is whether or not the word vatirtseni is a past tense word or a future tense word. Is Yaakov begging him to say, please accept my gift. I have seen your face, which is somehow like seeing a divine being, and you have been appeased by me. Or was this part of his plea, please accept it so that you should be appeased by me. Let's take a look at Rashi and see if Rashi understands what Yaakov is saying and why he's begging him to take it so badly. Says Rashi, if I have found favor in your eyes, in the first column halfway through, the lokachta min chosi miyadi, ki kadai v'hagoyim l'chosha tekabel min chosi. It is appropriate, Yaakov says to Esav. it is fitting that you should accept this gift from me. So I'm begging you, please, why am I begging you? Why do I want you so badly to accept this gift? Because it's most appropriate that you should accept it. Al asher ra'ifi panecha, inasmuch I have seen your face, we've now actually, they haven't seen each other, remember, in over 20 years. When they last saw each other, Esav wanted to kill Yaakov because in the moments leading up to that last moment, Yaakov had just stolen the bracha from him. Now this is the first time that he's seeing him. And he says, inasmuch as I have seen your face, v'hein chashuvin li kiri'iyas p'nei hamalach. And it's equivalent to me, says Yaakov, according to Rashi, as if I'm seeing the face of your angel. What was the episode which took place right before this? Now we didn't learn that together, but what took place right before this? He has the famous fight with Esav's angel. Says Yaakov, can't believe this. Just last night I had this battle with this angel, and now I'm seeing you. You're not going to... You look just like the angel that I fought with last night. Says Yaakov, it is kedai, it is most appropriate and fitting that you, who are equivalent to me as seeing the angel that I saw last night, should accept this. The ode in Rashi adds, furthermore, adds Yaakov an argument, that last language of Atir Tseini, in the past tense, Al Shanis Ratzi, Sizli Limchol Al Surchani, that you have been appeased by me to accept that which my mistaken behaviors. What are my mistaken behaviors that Yaakov would be referring to when he says, Atir Tseini, that you've been appeased by me? Stealing the bracha. So says Yaakov, you look just like the angel. I beg you, please accept these gifts because you have been appeased by me for having stolen your blessings. Because remember, what did Esav just say a moment before? Keep that which is yours. What did Rashi comment on that? He was acknowledging the stuff is yours. Says Yaakov, then please, I beg you, accept these gifts. Number one, because your appearance is somehow like this angelic being that I fought with last night. And number two, an acknowledgement that you've been appeased by me, that you've accepted my behaviors, and you've acknowledged that I am now in control of the birthright. So please accept these as an indication that you have in the past already been appeased by me for my behaviors. Why is he mentioning the fight with the angel, says Rashi? Says Rashi, Kadeshi is yore heimenu, that he should be afraid of him. That Esav should say, you did what last night? You just fought with the angel that's in charge of me and my people? Like, again, you're talking about people an understanding of what these things are. That he should therefore be moved by that. So in other words, so Yaakov was coming from a twofold angle, according to Rashi. Number one, mentioning that he had a battle with Esav's angel, to sort of put him in a stature of greatness, that's what he did. He fought and was victorious. And number two, accept them, please, as a result of the fact that you have been appeased by me already in accepting the fact that I have bought the birthright, accept these gifts as a statement of acknowledgement of that. That's how Rashi seems to be learning why Yaakov is begging Esav to accept him as an indication of that which has already taken place, that you've already been appeased by me. The Ramban doesn't like this approach. The Ramban says, why would Yaakov bring up the very issue that he had to run away for 20 years for? Why would he mention, just leave the whole thing alone? He doesn't think that it would be appropriate for Yaakov to have specifically brought that up. And therefore the Ramban translates this a little bit differently. He says as follows. Accept your gift because when I saw you, it's like seeing something divine, says the Ramban as follows. Seeing you is like when I see the Pnei Elokim, Vatirtseini, and you should be appeased by my gift. Meaning, Ka'asher ha'elokim rotzef yireyav v'kabolos minchosam v'kirbanam. Just like Hashem is appeased by those who fear him when they offer him gifts and sacrifices, and Hashem accepts our offerings, accepts our gifts, and appeases them. So too, Yaakov is therefore begging Esav, I have given you all these gifts, kiros pnei ha'elokim, in the same way as when I approach and see a godly being, vatirtzeni, and I give him gifts and offerings to be appeased, I therefore beg of you, please accept these gifts as a sign that you will be appeased by me. So whereas Rashi wanted it as a sign that he has already forgiven him, accept these, please I beg you, and he mentions the angel to frighten Esav, Yaakov, the way Ramban understands it, what Yaakov is really doing is he's saying, I'm begging you to take them in the same way as I beg Hashem to accept my offerings. Don't turn me away. I've brought you a sacrifice. I've brought you a gift. Accept my gift and be appeased. Yaakov is simply pleading with Esav, please accept my gift, be appeased, forgive me for what I've done through your accepting of this gift. In the same way, why does he bring in the concept of the Pnei Elohim, the face of a, he's bringing in the same way that the Elohim, in the same way that Hashem accepts gifts and is appeased, I'm asking of you and begging of you too, please accept this gift and be appeased. That's how the Ramban understands that dialogue. Okay, be that as it may, I want to cover some other things, so let's move on to that. How does Yaakov, we brushed over at the end of Yaakov's approach, he uses a following, in Pasuk Yid Aleph, in the second Pasuk, and his begging of Esav to accept it, he says, Kachnas birchasi, please accept my blessings, asher hu vaslach that I have brought you, ki chanani elokim v'chi yeshli kol, because I have everything. I have everything that there is. And so he pressed him, and Esav accepted. And the Rashi, the sages, Chazal, are very moved by the different way that Yaakov and Esav, just a few verses away, describe what it is that they have. Esav uses the language of Yeshli Rav, I have a lot. And Yaakov says, Yeshli Kol, I have everything. Says Rashi, let's start with that. Rashi says it's on the second column, two lines from the top. Yeshli kol, kol si pukai. Now, what does that mean? Rashi's bothered by, I have everything? That's impossible. A human being can't have everything.
Everything I need.
Oh, so says Rashi, that's what it means. Everything that I need, yeah.
You see, Esav probably has fights with people all the time. And people maybe appease him, and they offer tribute, and he goes out fighting, and, you know, the whole bracha, it wasn't a life-changing event for him.
Mm-hmm.
But for Yaakov, it's a life-changing event, and getting to go back to his homeland, and where his parents are from, and seeing his brother again, and the characteristics he shares with his brother, and how he's different, and having the dream. You know, he did a lot of mental preparation and the dream and the wrestling with the angel. It's, for him, this is a very big deal. So Yeshli Kol, I saw Hashem's face. You know, I could have died from this, and my whole life could have been different if I didn't have the bracha. And this is a big moving experience for me, and I definitely want to give you tribute, and then I'm going to get away from you as fast as I can.
Right.
You know, and for Esav, it's not the same thing. It's like, I'm hungry, I eat something, I hunt, I fight. He's a shallow person.
You're right. And I think what the sages are coming, like, you're explaining why they would use those different languages. I think what Chazal were bothered by is, in both instances, they're describing what it is that they already have. Why they either should accept the gift or should not accept the gift, and how different it is that they use the words they use to describe that, of
mm-hmm.
I have everything, or I have a lot. Mm-hmm. So the way Rashi comments, Rashi kol si pukai, so Rashi's answering the question, how could Yaakov say, I have everything? That's impossible. No one has everything. So he says, I have everything that I need. Yeah.
What comes to mind with me is peace. And when you talk about forgiveness, that I think history has taught us that we may be in a position where we have to forgive, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we have to forget. Because we're kind of trained that if we forget, then it's very possible that history will repeat itself. So I kind of get that message in there.
It could be. I think that even when we don't forget, it still repeats itself.
Yeah.
It can't, yes. Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, that's fine. Let's stay focused on Rashi for a second. Rashi says, Esav diber b'loshon gaiva. Esav spoke with a very haughty language. I have a lot. Yoiser v'yoiser mikidei tzarchi, more and more than what I need. Whereas Yaakov spoke with a more humble tone of, I have everything that I need. Now, Shlomo Volbin, the Ali Shor, which we've quoted various times, you know, points out how different is this mida of his stapkus, of being happy with what you have. It's Chazal using the language of nesamech b'chelko, being happy with what you have. Yaakov teaching us here this idea of yesh li kol, that a Jew walks around with a sense of, I have everything that I need, as opposed to Esau's, I have a lot. Because when you have a lot, you could always have more. But that sense of, I have everything that I need. Chazal use the language of someone who has 100 really wants 200, and a person who has 200 wants 400, so they're never satisfied. And the trait that Yaakov is trying to teach us is the person who has 100 doesn't want 200. Not just that I'm okay, what can I do? Words, like he describes it in the sense of a b'dievin and a l'chatchila. It's like, it's alright, or it really should be this way. So a person wants to work on this trait. So they say, okay, this is what I have. This is the kind of car I have. This is the kind of home. This is the kind of job. Okay. You know, I'd like it to be different. But this is what it is, and I'm going to learn from Yaakov that I'm going to be happy with it. That's one approach, which is much better than Esau's approach. But it's still not there. That's where you're saying, I really want it to be different, but I have heard from my rabbis and teachers enough to accept what it is that I have, so I will accept that which is here and say, all right, this is also okay. I don't want to be like Esau. This is also good. So no. Yesh li kol means I don't want what it is that I don't have. Because if I don't have it, I don't need it. And I have been given that which I need, and I am actually happy l'chatchila with what it is that I have. This is what I want. And it's not just that I want more, but accept the fact that I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't want it. I have what it is that I need. That's just on the simple level of trying to understand the difference between Yaakov and Esau, the understanding between being okay, happy, satisfied with what it is that you have, and describing it as opposed to I have what I need, saying, oh, yeah, I have a lot. Says the Revolver, there is far more depth in what's going on over here. Says the Gemara. The Gemara says as follows in Maseches Bava Basra. Tanu Rabbanan. It's unbelievable. Shloisha hit iman HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olam hazeh me'ein olam haba. There are three people who Hashem gave a taste of the world to come while they were still living in this world. Three people experienced that. Experienced what it would be like to have a taste of that. World to come, but they were still here. Who are the three? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Says the Gemara, how do I know Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov experienced that? Avraham dechiv vei, v'hashem beirach es Avraham ba'kol. Avraham was blessed, the Torah says, ba'kol, with everything. Yitzchak, how do we know that Yitzchak had that taste? Dechiv vei, v'oichel mikol. Avraham was ba'kol, Yitzchak is mikol, and Yaakov dechiv yeshli kol. Now, should be familiar with you from benching. Bakol, mikol, kol, to be blessed with everything. Why do we have that triple language of bakol, mikol, kol? We're paralleling the blessings given to Avraham, which was bakol, the blessing given to Yitzchak, which was mikol, and the blessing given to Yaakov, the blessing which is a statement of, I have kol, bakol, mikol, kol.
The blessing mikol, is that like from all, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Continues the Gemara. There were three people, lo shalot bahen, Yetzer Hara. Three people did not have to deal with the Yetzer Hara. Elohim, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. What does it say by them that we could derive that they did not experience the Yetzer Hara? Bakol, Mikol, and Kol. They had everything. Says Rav Volga, if you think and understand the depth of what Chazal are saying in this, it starts from a simple meaning. What do we learn from Yaakov when he says, Yesh li kol? It means to be mistapik, to be satisfied with what it is that you have and not desire more. If you don't have more, it's because you don't need more. You have what it is that you need. You know what the depths of that creates? Olam Haba. And if to experience life and not even want that which somebody else has, not even desire to have more than it is that you have, is a taste of Olam Haba in Olam Haza. Yeah.
Well, mostly we're disconnected from God, and we also don't understand why there's tragedy, and we don't see the big picture of the future. But Avraham Avinu definitely understood the big picture of the future. God keeps telling him he's going to have children,
mm-hmm.
and he keeps holding faith with God. And Yitzchak was also, you know, very similarly, very happy with what he had and very, very close to God. So it's like they see the big future and they know the future of the Jewish people and they're not worried when they see tragedy. So at that point, Yaakov still has Hakol. Later on, Yaakov is going to spend 20 years looking for his son.
Correct. Are you saying why we struggle with this? Yeah, I think Gemara says only three people in history had this experience. Tell you, we're not there. But what the lesson is, says Rav Olda, the trait of gaiva, of haughtiness, of jealousy, of wanting more, that's what takes us out of this world. What allows us or forces us or doesn't allow us, I should say, to experience that bliss of what will be the world to come is that sense within us of, I don't have everything that I need. And when I have that, what starts from there can manifest itself in many different ways. But as a whole, what it does is, he's saying at its core, what Rav Olda was pointing out, at the core of not being able to experience the taste of the world to come, is at its core not feeling I have everything that I need. And whether or not it leads to jealousy, whether or not it leads to being involved in all sorts of other things, whether or not dissatisfaction, unhappiness, depression, anger, you name it, but it's because there's something out there that you want, and you don't feel yesh li kol.
So you can never have peace of mind.
Correct. You would never have. You will never have peace of mind for sure. Yeah.
Now, we're talking though about material things, right?
Yes.
One can wish for more spirituality, more spiritual.
Yes.
Things.
So it's known as kinas sofrim, the sages say. Yeah, we're so being jealous of. Yeah. Right. Yeshli go. And Yaakov said, Yeshli kol, kol sipukai. Rashi says, everything that I need in this world, I have. And that translates, the Chazal say, into not having a Yetzer Hara. Because what's the Yetzer Hara going to get you on? I don't need anything more. And I have a taste of the world to come while I still yet live in this world because I have everything. You know, even Yaakov himself, how long was he able to maintain that before his Saturn? But as a goal, as to be aware of what's out there, wow, to sense and feel, I have everything that I need. I have it. And that, to, that sense of, says the Gemara, that's a taste of Olam Haba. Okay, we need to cover a little bit more. Okay, now we have this next little piece I want to focus on, as understood by Rebbe mine from Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Moshe Eisenman. He writes about this in his book on parenting as an introduction. This next two verses. We now have this meeting. Yaakov has been preparing it. He prepared for war. He sent all these gifts. He's been davening. He meets up face-to-face with Esav. Esav has his army of 400 men. Esav says, why did you give me these things? Yaakov says, I want to win favor, whether or not it's that you should appease me, whether or not it's because you already have appeased me. Please, I beg you, accept these gifts. I have everything that I need. Here, take them. And Esav now accepts. What now happens as Yaakov would like to continue on his journey to meet up with his parents back in Eretz Yisrael. He's now with his brother who he hasn't seen. Says Esav in Pasuk Yubeis, Vayoymer Nisa v'neilecha ve'elcha l'negdecha. Remember, says the Ramban, this entire episode is going to foretell that which will be over the course of our entire history with Esav. Esav has come out with war. He's come out fighting. And Yaakov appeases him with gifts and with prayer, with getting himself ready. And Esav accepts. And then what does Esav say? Why don't we travel together? You know what? I'll change my pace. Obviously, me and my 400 men can move faster than you with all of your kids and your flock. No problem. I'll move slower. Let's go together. If you remember Esav's, when Yaakov, in his prayer, he says, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. spare me, Hashem, please save me from my brother, from Esav. Why does he say the double language, save me from my brother, from Esav? Because sometimes he'll attack me like Esav, but sometimes he'll attack me as if he's my brother. Sometimes it's with love, and sometimes it's with hate. And as we all know from our exile that we're in currently, the attack of love is sometimes far more vicious than the attack of hate. We've lost more Jews to assimilation in America than we did during the Holocaust, without question. And it's not, there's no hatred. It's not with guns, and it's not with crematorium. It's just with love, and be with us, and we'll open everything open to you. Whatever you want, you can have. And it's a very dangerous gullus. Esav at his most violent, dangerous stage, Hatileini no miyad achim miyad Esav, spare me from my brother, from Esav. And Esav says, no problem, Yaakov, you don't want to fight? Let's go together. I'll walk with you to Eretz Yisrael, I'll accompany you. I'll change my pace, he says, ve'elcha l'negdecha, I will proceed alongside you. Rashi learns, b'shavalach, equivalent to you, same. I will do this favor for you, says Esav. She'arich yomai holachti l'oleches la'ad kasher ato tzarech. I will slow down my pace, extend my journey, so that we can go together. You and I, brothers, says Esav. Answers Yaakov, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Yom Re'lov Adoni, my master, Adoni Yodea, my master knows, ki hayiladim rakim, the children are young, v'hatzon v'avakar alos alai, and the flocks, and the cattle, their burden is upon me, utfakum yoim echad v'mesu kol atzon. And if I drive them too hard, even for a single day, the entire flock of sheep will die. The parents are running out of time, so we're going to say this very briefly. There's something very odd about this pasuk. How many things is Yaakov concerned about in the beginning of the pasuk? Three things. His children are young, he's got flocks of sheep, and he's got cattle. And if I push them too hard, what will happen? Who will die?
Flock.
No, that's not what he says.
He says the flock.
Now, if you look in the Hebrew, it's clear. Umesu ko hatzon. The sheep. The flock is a reference to the sheep. He refers to, I'm afraid I have children, I have cattle, and I have sheep. And if I push them too hard, all the sheep will die. That's all you're concerned about? What happened to the children? So the Ramban comments over here that out of his sensitivity, Yaakov didn't want to say the words, if I push him too hard, the children will die. And he references, there are two places in the Gemara talks about this. One place the Gemara says, Bris krusa im hapeh, there's a covenant that was sealed with the mouth. The mouth of a Jew is a powerful tool. And you don't say things that you don't want to happen. You don't even say the words. Don't let the words exit your mouth, if I push too hard, my children will die. Don't say it. So he said, if I push too hard, my sheep will die, because the words will not exit my mouth. Such a thing. Gemara says in another way, the Gemara says in a different place, Al-tiftach peh l'satan. Don't open up your mouth to the satan. You don't open your mouth to say something that you don't want, something bad, negative, evil. You don't say the words. And so you'll often find in Gemara, for example, when you're talking about different cases, you're talking about someone who killed somebody else. So you never say to your chavrusa, okay, like let's say you killed Reuven, and then you were taken to, you don't say that. You say, okay, we're talking about Reuven who killed Shimon out there. There's this made up Reuven and Shimon. That's who we're talking about. But I never want to even give an example, like if I'm talking to somebody, and let's say you killed somebody, or let's say, well, if your child died, then you, no, you don't talk like that. You don't let those words exit your mouth. When something like that happens, you don't, and there's certain words that are not even said. And there's a sensitivity that a Jew has to the words which come out of our mouth, even when you don't mean it in any way. You're just bringing an example. You're just saying that Yaakov was just afraid that it might happen. Didn't want to say the words. I don't say those things. The certain way that a Jew talks, certain power that he understands, is latent within the words, as the Gemara uses the language of bris krusa imapet. It's like a covenant that was sealed with the mouth. And when the mouth says something, it has significance. Whether you mean it, you don't mean it, you want it to happen, you didn't want it to happen, there are certain things that are just not said. And it's very popular. Ramban points that out over here. Like, what happened? He's talking about his children. Like, you're afraid of your kids, and then you say, the flock might die? Who cares about the flock? No, he's very concerned about his children, but those words will not even exit his mouth to say such a thing. That's parenthetical.
What's the effect of people who speak ill
of that? Yeah, it's pretty bad. In other words, you say, the Chofetz Chaim discusses that. A person curses, a person doesn't speak appropriately. So the Chofetz Chaim says, you ever wonder, a person says, I understand, I dive in, I learn, and it doesn't have any impact. I don't feel like it's changing me as a person, I don't feel like my prayers are answered. So the Chofetz Chaim says, well, what tool are you using? That mouth, which speaks like that over there, then goes into shul and speaks these words, and you think it's going to have power or meaning? The tool is filthy. The tool is messed up. You can't accomplish fine craftsmanship with a broken, dull tool. So when you ruin the tool, so then even when you try to use it for Dvar Mishabit Dushi, you try to use it for more appropriate or holy endeavors, it just doesn't have the same impact because it's not able to produce what it is that it's capable of doing it because you've ruined it. He uses that. That's his example of explaining that. That's what happens. A person can ruin the power of his mouth based on the way that he speaks. Because if the mouth is one of his most powerful tools, kol Yaakov, what do we have other than our voice? That's the power of the Jew. It's not in the Ayidai Midei Esav. The power of the hand is in the hand of Esav, but the power of the Jew is in the hand of Yaakov. And the power of the Jew is in the mouth of Yaakov. And you destroy the power of your mouth, you destroy your most powerful tool that we have in this world. Yeah?
Well, knowing the all the metaphor and everything that is with the story of Moshe when he goes to reach for the coal and then he touches his mouth and then his speech is impaired until he reaches a certain age.
Yeah.
Is there a connection with this?
It's in a different form. That connection there, the idea of the mouth of Moshe being impaired is a very powerful concept. The Morel speaks about that in great length based on the same idea that the mouth is our most powerful tool, but it's the most powerful tool which combines our physical being with our spiritual being, which meets at the point of the mouth in which we're able to express verbally certain ideas. I'm saying it very briefly now. So the Morel says Moshe, who was not a combination of spiritual and physical, he was far more weighted to the spiritual, person who lives for 40 days and 40 nights without eating or drinking up on Har Sinai. So his mouth was messed up because he didn't have that, it wasn't the balance between his physical and his spiritual. He was so weighted towards the spiritual that his speech was impaired because the tool which was used to combine them, everything was, it was off. I'm saying very briefly a very deep concept which needs to be explained, and I'm not explaining it because maybe when we get to Parsha Shmos. But he says it was not by, he asks a question, he says, I don't understand. The greatest person who ever lived, our greatest prophet, the person who uses his mouth as to communicate between Hashem and us, he's got a speech impediment? He says, how could that be? So he says, it could be because his mouth, the tool of the peh, was in it, which is the center of connecting the physical and the spiritual, but he was off kilter. He was different than the rest of us, and therefore it manifested itself in that power. When man is created, so the Torah says, we became a speaking being. That's what was unique about man. So Moshe's ability to speak was ruined. And so that's why that's the whole idea of the bris kus in peh, that the covenant was sealed with our mouth. The tool, the power of our ability to speak is such.
So when we train a parent to speak words, really has no significance?
Yeah, there's nothing there.
You know, they are saying the words, if not.
Yeah, the Gemara uses a phrase when it talks about people wasting their words as, the Aramaic is going to escape me, like a bird chirping. A human being can become a chirping bird. You're moving your muscles and there's sound coming out, but there's nothing of substance coming out. It's such a beautiful, like Aramaic is in it. It's, you know, like you become a chirping bird. So yeah, you're saying words. All right, so you could teach a parrot to speak and you could teach a human to speak like a parrot. You know, it's the same thing.
Doesn't the Torah also teach us that we were born, we were given a certain amount of words that we can use?
I don't know. I don't know the source of that. I don't want to say that that's not true.
Okay.
I don't know the source of that. I've heard someone say that across, you know, somewhere in terms of being careful about the words you use because you're only given a certain amount and you don't want to waste them on Narishkeit.
Right.
I might be. I don't want to say that that's not true. I don't know this way or that way. I don't know the source of that. I don't know where that comes from. That could be something that's a Zohar and it's totally, you know, legit. And it could be that that's some bubble miser that somebody made up. I don't know. I don't know. If anyone knows the source of that, I would like to add that to a repertoire in terms of that would fit with this. I just don't know that that's true. So maybe I'll ask around. I'm not familiar with the source of that.
I remember my grandmother, Frieda, who used to, when she would have to speak about something like a serious illness or something, and she would whisper, you know. And I used to think, why is she whispering, you know? And I don't think that she knew why. But I think that this is what it was related to. She knew it on some level.
Right. We just were careful with the words that we speak. Our words are very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and there's an al tiftach tavik. Gemara says, don't open up your mouth. Don't open your mouth to the satan. If you don't want something to happen, you don't say it. You know, I think even in American culture, I don't know where the knock on wood comes from, but there's like, it has made its... I mean, but it's made its way into other cultures, religions, that there's something about, like when you say something, like now it's in existence. Like, where does that come from? Where does that idea come from? That's an original, it's a Torah concept. That your mouth is very powerful. The things that you say are very powerful. Now, there's no Jewish concept of like, oh, so you like now it's okay. That's made up. That's not Jewish. But that we just don't say it. There's, you know, like when you know, like don't al tiftach pe. You know, don't say it. Keep it out. Don't bring it into existence. Don't bring it down into the world. It's just it's left unsaid. It's left unsaid. All right, that's all right. There was more talk. We really needed. We'll have to finish. Maybe next year we'll get back to this idea of the debate. What? You don't all listen to the old Shirim online, where you can like keep up posted with one. This last dialogue between Esav and Yaakov, where Esav wants to walk with him and Yaakov rejects him, and he asks again. That's a whole other shmooze. Maybe we'll have to get back to that. All right.
Thank you so much.